A morning, today's daf in Sukkah, daf lamed beis, lev, heart of palm. We'll come back to that. Today's daf will be sponsored by the Lupin Foundation, Lezecher Nishmas Lois Lupin Zaltzman. We are on lamed alef lamed beis. It is interesting that the beginning of the parak brought up the concept of mitzvah ba'avera. Right, it's a big topic, it's an exciting topic, but after the first daf, that's it, we don't mention it anymore. Meaning in yesterday's daf and today's daf, we will not be mentioning the concept of mitzvah ba'aver, even though there were a couple of opportunities to mention it. Yesterday's daf was dedicated primarily to the sukkah gazel, the stolen sukkah. The stolen sukkah, the machlokas, whether or not you could be yotzei with the stolen sukkah or not. The chachamim's position is that it works. The stolen sukkah would work as a sukkah for sukkahs. Again, as we mentioned yesterday, not condoning the act of stealing, but just simply the result would be that the sukkah would be valid. Why should that be? Based on the principles of karkein and exelis, or based on the principles of takanas meirish. Okay, a lot of big topics that came up yesterday, a lot of baba kama topics that came up yesterday, but ultimately it would be fine. There are a couple of instances where a stone sukkah would not be good on sukkahs. We looked at the Rashi yesterday, but that goes back to yesterday's daf. And then after that, we came back to the topic of lulav hagazel v'hayavesh. Yesterday, the Gemara found a Tana that says that yavesh is acceptable. It's not an invalidation of your lulav. And the Tana is Rabbi Yehuda. And not only that, but Rabbi Yehuda also feels that even by an esrog, yavesh is not ipsul. Yavesh does not disqualify your esrog, and your esrog can be dry. What about the fact that the Torah says priyat hadar? So Rabbi Yehuda gives a different shot altogether in terms of what the word priyat hadar means, but it has nothing to do with the aesthetics and the beauty of the esrog. We are on Lamed Alpha Amud Beis. We're at the two dots towards the bottom of the Amud, and we are on the Asher in the Urani Dachas. And here's another opportunity where the Gemara could have invoked the principle of Mitzvah Baba Avera, and the Gemara does not. We learned in our Mishnah of Asher and Urani Dachas that if I have a lulav that comes from an Asher tree or Urani Dachas, Asher tree is a tree that was planted for the specific purpose of Avodah Zarah, and Urani Dachas is a city where the majority of the city is involved in Avodah Zarah. The city itself now has status. The city itself has the status of an Ir Nidachas. All the possessions of the city are brought into the center of the city, destroyed, are burnt in the center of the city. And the Mishnah says that if I use either one of those, I have not fulfilled my mitzvah. Why not? Why haven't I fulfilled my mitzvah? So I would have said, in other words, had it not been for the Gemara, I would have said mitzvah ba'avera, meaning it's these palms were worshipped as a Avodah Zarah. The Gemara does not say that. The Gemara says, Shal Asher v'shal Irani Dachas v'shal Asher Apostle. So the Gemara says, V'amar Rav Alula Shal Avodah Zarah lo yitol v'im natal kasher. Not only does the Gemara not say that, the Gemara goes in the other direction. The Gemara quotes a statement by Rava. Rava says that if I take a lulav that was Shal Avodah Zarah, it was worshipped. Rashi gives a couple of examples of Shel Avodah Zarah. If you look at Rashi, Shishim Shabol Avodah Zarah, Lechabi Lefaneh Karka, one pshat in Rashi is that I swept in front of the Avodah Zarah, so in other words, it was an accessory. It helped it facilitated the worship of Avodah Zarah. Inami Shah Avodah Sa, Bil Lulav Lahavir Lefaneh Lazar Kabal, or this is actually the way the Avodah Zarah is offered. We remember back in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, so we talked about how there were various idolatries that were worshipped in an unusual manner. And if that's the normal method of worshipping it, so that's considered Avodah Zarah. Right? The prime example that's given often in the Gemara and Avodah Zarah is the Markalus. The Markalus is where I take a stone and I throw it some other stones, and you know, it looks silly, but it's Avodah Zarah. That has the status of Avodah Zarah. So Rashi over here in the second shot says same thing over here, meaning that the way that this particular Avodah Zarah is worshipped is that they offer palms in front of it. Anyway, the point being that Rava says is that it's okay. In other words, you can use it for your lulav. So the Gemara says that seems to be in contradiction to our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says that if I have an Asherah, it can't be used as a lulav. So Hachab Asherah Demoshe Askina Diktutim Echtashirei. So the Gemara says, okay, our Mishnah is not talking about just any Asherah, but it's talking specifically about the Asherah of Moshe. What does that mean, Asherah of Moshe? Again, let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi says Asherah of Moshe. Osam Shayu Bishas Kivush Eretz Yisrael. When we entered into Eretz Yisrael and conquered Eretz Yisrael, Shehitzrichen Akal cost of Sreifa. So we know that when we go into Eretz Yisrael, so we have to burn, we have to incinerate all the Avodah Zarah trees in Eretz Yisrael. Dechsev, he quotes from Parshas Re'ev, Ashreim and Tisrafun Ba'esh, that any of the Asheres have to be burnt. The Lulav Tzarech Shir, and so now what's the problem? The fact that it has to be burnt now creates a logistic issue, a very simple logistic issue. I don't have a lulav anymore. Meaning, and Rashi over here employs the rule, I command the mechta chiure kevin de la srefa kai. Since it's supposed to be burnt, so therefore we view it as if it's burnt. So what do I have in my hand? I don't have a lulav, I have ashes of lulav. Even though in the current state, it may not yet be burnt, but still, because there's a din that it has to be burnt, so therefore, ketut de mechta chiure, I look at it in its pulverized state, and basically I don't have the lulav, I have only lulav particles in my hand. That's the that's Rashi's explanation of the Gemara. So first of all, we're introduced to the whole concept of ketute mechta shiure, which basically means that if something is destined to be burnt, so I looked at it in its pulverized state. Is this halacha limited to just to the din of Sreifa? From Rashi, the answer seems to be yes. Meaning that the only say ketute mechta shiure, only under the circumstance where it needs to be burnt. Meaning if it were any other Isser Hanam, maybe we wouldn't say that. Okay, that point is debatable, and now is not going to be a good time to debate it, but that point is debatable. Just one other thing, and again, just a basic issue which needs to be explained. How come it is that that I could use a lulav of Avodah Zarah for the mitzvah of lulav? That's strange, right? Yeah. In other words, if I have a lulav of Avodah Zarah, it's also ba'na. Meaning anything used for the purpose of Avodah Zarah, I can't get benefit from it. There's an Isser Hana. So in other words, so if I have something which is prohibited in Hana, and I'm allowed to use it for a mitzvah, and oddly enough, the answer is, yes, you're allowed to. We're going to do one more Rashi. Rashi over here says, V'im nato kasher. I know I went out of order, but Rashi says, V'im nato kasher. V'alfagav d'isurei hanahu. So Rashi over here points out, yes, the lulav is asur b'hana. Meaning this particular palm was used for Avodah Zarah. So Rashi says, okay, but we have a rule. Mitzvos lav lehenos nitnu. Klomar, en kiyam mitzvos hanas aguf, el avodas eved l'rabam. We are not benefiting from the mitzvos. Meaning, obviously, when we do a mitzvah, so there's going to be a reward stored for us. Good. But that's lost in love, meaning that's after 120 years. But on this earth, so there's no benefit from the mitzvahs that we do. So it's not considered a hana'a when I take something that's also bahana and use it for the purpose of a mitzvah. Because mitzvahs of lanos nitnu, so therefore there is no violation of the iser hana'a. And yes, oddly enough, you can take a lulav that was used for avodah zarah, even though it's also bahana, and use it for a mitzvah. Okay, so those are the basic issues. And then the overarching issue, which the Gemara does not discuss, is why doesn't the Gemara mention mitzvah about ba'avera? Meaning, isn't it odd? Meaning, yesterday the Gemara missed an opportunity of mitzvah about ba'avera when we talked about the stolen sukkah. And today, even though it really goes back to yesterday's daf, and today another missed opportunity in terms of mitzvah about ba'avera. How can you do a mitzvah based on something which was used in avera? So over here, one could give a simple explanation. Tosfos gives such an explanation that over here, the mitzvah and the avera are totally unrelated. Meaning, as opposed to theft, it's easy because when it comes to theft, how did I gain the item? I gained the item by stealing the item. So therefore, the mitzvah is accomplished through the avera. But over here, the mitzvah and the avera really are two separate. In other words, they're coincidental. They're not related to one another. The fact that the lulav was worshipped for Avodah Zarah, okay. But in other words, I want to do the mitzvah of Netilas Lulav. The mitzvah and the Aver are just simply not related to one another. So, and I didn't gain the mitzvah by doing the Avera. So, one can give a simple explanation like that. Okay, we move on. We're on the bottom of Lamed Aleph Lamed Beis. We're at the two daf Nikdam Rosha. Okay, from here going forward, and for the rest of today's daf, a lot of practical halacha would be better. If I brought a lulav in and we could demonstrate with a lulav. Okay, but it also would be better if we learned this 6 months from now. So so that I would actually have a lulav on possession. Okay, so I will try my best to illustrate and to diagram. There's a lulav there. Okay. Is it going to help? It'll help, yeah. All right, Nikdam Rosho. Thank you. I didn't expect that. Okay. Nikdam Rosho. I think we're a month away from Pesach, but okay. Niktam Rosho. Okay, the head is chopped off. So I'm Rav Huna Loshan Ola Niktam Aval Nizda Kasher. Now Nikta means that the head is chopped off. But if it's Nizdak, but if it's just a crack, if it's just a split, so a split would be okay, a split would be acceptable. So Nizda Kasher, the Gemara says, is that right? You right, Vatanya. The Gemara quotes a brisa, Lulav Kafutz, Kavutz, Saduk, Akum, Domalama, I'll explain each one of these. Domalamagal, Pasol, Pasol. Okay, so let's pause. So the Bryce over here is going to explain that lulavim that have various imperfections, various blemishes, are going to be no good. So let's go one by one, step by step. So lulav kafuf. So number one, it's bent. If you take a look at Rashi, Rashi over here is rosho kafuf kaagmon. So Rashi says the top of it is bent like a reed. Domos leishka bain. Looks like a hunchback, says Rashi. V'azaken shirashem shachinu kufufim lamata. Okay, so apparently bad poor posture is not a new phenomenon. Poor posture has been around for years, for hundreds of years. And basically, if you want to have a visual of what it would look like to have a ben lulav, so basically Rashi says, look at the hunchback, and you'll get an idea. Now, from Rashi, it sounds like kafuf is referring to the head being bent over, the tip of the lulav. Okay, this brings about a major debate, a debate amongst the Rishonim. You could read into Rashi. The issue is, do I need the entirety of the lulav to be straight? Meaning, very often you're going to go to your local lulav market, and you're going to find that sometimes when you get to the tip of the lulav, so it's bent over. Okay, so it's got a little hook on the top. Some people love that little hook, and some people do not love that little hook. So the people who don't love that little hook, so what are they going to do? They're going to point to our Gemara, and they're going to point to our Rashi. Our Rashi says, Rosho Kafuf Kagmon. Rosho says that, and this is a list of things which are possible. I cannot believe that.
This is from that city.
Okay. still fresh. Okay. So Rashi says Rosho. Rashi says it's the head. So from Rashi, it sounds like that the whole entire thing has to be straight all the way to where you get to the tip. So good. So that's okay. This is a little bit. I mean, but in other words, okay, fine. That's the so that's the Rashi. And so certainly from Rashi, you get the sense that that the whole thing has to be straight from top to bottom. Not all Rishonim agree with Rashi, but again, though this touches on the major Knepel issue. Kavutz, we are on the next list mentioned in the Braisa, or on the very top of Lamed Beis Amanov. What does that mean, Kavutz? So Rashi writes, Shiyotzin l'shbesheja shalo uksin kimin kotzin. So there are thorns coming out of it. Okay, so I've yet to see it, meaning I've handled a couple of lulavim in my lifetime, and I've yet to see the thorns come out of the lulav, but apparently there are some species, or I don't know, I haven't seen it. So, but where there are thorns that come out, that's no good. Saduk, so obviously that's the problem. Meaning the Braisa mentioned Saduk. Saduk means that there's a crack in the lulav. There's a split somewhere in the lulav. And so the Gemara start off by Rav Huna saying that if it's nizdak, if it's cracked, it's okay. And meanwhile, the Braisa says Saduk, if it's cracked, it's one of the things that makes the puzzle. Akum doma lemagal, if it is bent like a sickle. So over here now, you understand the Braisa, two terms. The Braisa start off with the word kafuf. And that's what forced Rashi to say that's talking about the head of the lulav, because now we're talking akum. Akum also means bent. It's basically the same thing. So akum seems to be more of a general contour of the lulav. And the Braisa says that if it's bent like a sickle, meaning the entire lulav from top to bottom. So if it's bent now, I'm going to try to bend this in a couple of ways. You'll see the Gemara is going to actually discuss which way it bends. It bends to the right, bends to the left. But right now, the Gemara is assuming this is going to be a hard bend, but it bends basically, this doesn't bend. But it bends, right? It bends either against its spine or in front of its spine. Well, hopefully I'll be clear about that in just a moment. But anyway, puzzle, all these cases would be puzzle. Charos, puzzle. What does that mean? Charos, again, take a look at Rashi. Rashi describes charos. Kashe shenase charios. It becomes hardened. Shekein derech alulav alav noshim b'yemosak shamim v'hashedra mitkasher v'naseid. So eventually what's going to happen is that it's no longer going to be pliable. In other words, the frond is going to become so strong and so rigid that at that point in time now, it's possible. It's going to be disqualified. Anyway, continuing in the Braisa, doma l'charos kasher. But if it's getting to the point of being brittle, but it's not yet brittle, it has some pliability, so then it would be kasher. Okay, problem on the table is as follows. Rav Huna says that a crack is okay. The Braisa says that if it has a crack, it's not okay. It's disqualified. So I'm Rav Papa. So Rav Papa now will try to resolve. And he says, David Kehimnik. So he says, well, maybe. No, I don't know about maybe. But well, he's arguing that the Braisa that says Nizdak. Nizdak doesn't just simply mean that there's a crack in the leaf, in the top leaf. But Nizdak means that it actually looks like a Himnik. What exactly is a Himnik? So once again, I'm going to go back to Rashi. Rashi writes, Nira Kehimnik. Where is it? Here. Eladaviki Himnik, Rashi, second narrow line. Rashi gives a word. Phil, you may recognize the word. I don't. The Shel Barzel, Shel Sofrim. It's some sort of instrument used by the scribes. Okay? Sheyeshlo Shnei Roshin. Basically, it has two heads. Verosha Echa Mefutsal, Kach Gadal Halulov Kiminshte Shedraos, Machet Tisal Lankana, Machet Tisal Lankan. Basically, on the, when you get to the very top of the lulav, there's not just a split in the top leaf in the lulav, but it happens to be that if you look carefully, you'll see this lulav is not going to be good, but basically it goes up, and then when it gets to the top, it separates from one another. Almost looks like a mini pitchfork on the top, where you basically have two things coming off. Now, obviously, I'm doing this with my fingers, but in other words, if it naturally looks like that, so the Gemara says that's no good. So you'll see when you get to the lulav market and you see people staring at the top. So what are the things they're looking at? So one of the things they're looking at is a split like a hymnok, where basically as it gets to the top, so basically it looks like there are two tips and not one tip. That's the hymnok split. How much of a hymnok split is going to disqualify? So that's where you get to. That's where you get to the various opinions. Some say that even the smallest hymnic split on the top is going to disqualify the lulav. Okay, so this is an area where people could be machmir. Amar Rava. Okay, now, I'm sorry, Akum Doma Lamagal. Now we're going to be talking about the curvature of the lulav. So the Bryce has said that if it has a curvature and the curvature is like a sickle, so then it's no good. Now, in terms of actual amount of curvature, it's hard to quantify. The Gemara doesn't give any real form of quantification in terms of what kind of arc we're talking about. But the Gemara does do the following. So the Rava makes the following distinction. Okay, the Shedra right now is facing me. Right, the Shedra is the spine. So the spine's facing me. If it comes back, meaning if it leans back towards me against the spine, so Rava says that's fine. That's natural. That's a natural way the lulav grows. In other words, just basically walk outside and look at any of our palm trees, and you'll see that eventually what happens is that it leans back against its spine as it develops. That's a normal way of growth, and so therefore, if it leans against the spine, that would be fine. If it bends the other way, that's unnatural, meaning if it leans forward, so to say, the shedra facing me, and it leans forward, so that would not be good. That would be considered a disqualified bend. So the Gemara makes a distinction between a back bend versus a front bend. A back bend is fine, a front bend is not fine. It's disqualified. Amar Rav Nachman, the Gemara says, okay, now we went front back, how about to the right or to the left? So Amar Rav Nachman, lifstadin kilafan avdami, v'amri la kilachar avdami. So the Gemara over here brings two positions. Some say that it's considered as if a bend to the right or to the left, lifstadin is either considered like to the front or is like considered to the back. Obviously, that's two separate conclusions. If it's to the back, that would be good. If it's to the front, that would not be good. So in other words, the Gemara basically concluded self-ache. So in other words, try, obviously, to get a lulav that doesn't have a bend, any curvature to the right, to the left. So you're going to see people pick up a lulav, hold it to see if it's straight. They would prefer the lulav does not bend to the right and does not bend to the left. V'amrava hai lulav. Okay, so that's the... So we basically explored a hymnic split on the top, a curvature against the spine, to the right, going with the spine is fine, going to the front is not fine, to the right, to the left, the Gemara leaves off as a suffix. Now the way the lulav has it is that here's the shedra, here's the spine, and I have leaves coming obviously to the right and to the left. The way the Rashi understands the Gemara over here is, let's imagine, it's hard to, I haven't seen a lulav like this, but let's imagine leaves only grow on one side, and on the other side there are no leaves, it's just shedra. So the Gemara considers that to be a blemish, that's a mum, and the Gemara says, as possible, it's disqualifying. It's interesting, you're going to see very often, I mean, throughout our discussion here, Esrog, you're going to see a lot of carbon-like terminology used. So I'll go back to a point that we made earlier, the Ritva made this point earlier, that the lulav, the esrog, has carbon-like quality to it. It's not a carbon per se, but very often it's It's treated like a carbon. It's meratzeh. That's the Ritva's language. It appeases the Kadosh Baruch Hu, and so therefore you're going to see very often terms like Baal Mum, and we're going to talk in a lot of carbon terminology when describing the lulav and the other minim. Nifritzu alav. So the leaves are split. Okay. For purpose of illustration, I'm just going to take off one leaf. Okay. I'm sure it won't mind. Okay, so each leaf is really a composite of two leaves. In other words, each leaf can be split. They are connected. Each leaf is connected at one end. In other words, basically, this is open, and then you can even continue further splitting into two. So the Gemara says, Nifritzu, if it spreads out. So what did our Mishnah say? Our Mishnah says that spreading out is okay. I'm sorry. Nifritzu is more than just spreading out. Nifritzu means it totally, in other words, the leaves not only spread out, but they came undone. Look back at Rashi, back on the Mishnah. So Rashi wrote that Nifritzu means, if you look at Rashi in the Mishnah, I'm just going to read it again. Mishedra, it was totally broken off of the spine. Ve'ina mechubarin, ela ayidei aguda. In fact, the leaves, you know how we got the leaves back to the lulav? So we kind of tied them back on, meaning the leaves were actually removed. They were detached. And what I did is I basically put them back on and just like a little masking tape. Maybe. Whatever. In other words, we try to put it back on. So the Mishnah says that's no good. Mishnah says that's disqualified. Amar of Papa Nifritzu Davi Kichofia. So Rav Papa, in an attempt to help us understand a little bit better what we mean, so he says, Kichofia looks like a broom. Okay, in other words, right there, the old brooms back then. So basically, it's an assortment of palm trees, palm leaves, palm fronds, obviously that were torn off and then tied back on. Okay, so that's no good. That's Nifritzu. And Nifridu, Nifridifrude. And Nifridu of the Mishnah. You know what that means? That means that it was spreading out a little bit. So spreading out a little bit. In other words, most of the lulav, you're not going to have this problem. They're pretty tight, but something, in other words, as the frond develops, so the leaves are going to start to spread out. And they're going to start making their way out. So the Mishnah says that's okay. It's kosher. It doesn't disqualify the lulav if the leaves start spreading out. So the Gemara says, then the Gemara quoted the opinion, And then the Mishnah, according to the opinion of Rav Yehuda, and Rav Yehuda says that you should tie it up. Okay, we'll come back to Rav Yehuda in just a moment. Back to our Gemara by Rav Papa. Nechlaka ha-tiyomis mahu. What if the tiyomis splits? So first and foremost, what is the tiyomis? So we know the word tiyomis is from the word ta'omim. Right? That's pretty clear. That the word tiyomis is from the word ta'omim, which basically means the twin leaves. Now the truth of the matter is, as I just demonstrated over here with the lulav, every leaf of the lulav can really be described as a twin leaf, because every leaf of the lulav is really composite of two leaves that are bound together, that are connected together by one strip at the end. Okay, so really, when we're describing the tiyomis, it's possible that we could suggest that every leaf is a tiyomis. However, if you take a look at Rashi, again, we'll go back to Rashi. Nechleku tiyomis. How does Rashi describe it? Shnei alim elyonim emtzayim. Sheshama shedra kala. So Rashi describes where the spine ends, meaning Rashi says, follow the spine all the way up, and you're going to eventually get to a point where the spine ends. So over here, I'm looking, I know it would be better if you had a closer look, but basically here, I'll keep separating. Eddie, this is fantastic, thank you. I really didn't expect this. Okay, good. So basically, in other words, everyone sees, so basically I'm following the spine all the way up till I get to the end of the spine, and eventually now there's going to be a leaf coming off at the end of the spine. So Rashi says that's the tiyomis, meaning tiyomis is not just a reference to any leaf, but to Rashi says a tiyomis is a reference to the upper center leaf, this leaf right over here. That's the way Rashi seems to be describing it. So nechluku atiyomis, shnei alim elyonim emtzayim sheshama shedra kala, nechluku ze mizeh, v'nistika shedra, ad ha'alin shlamata mehem. And Rashi says, and here I'll do it with this lulav. That's right, I'm disqualifying this lulav right now as we speak. It's okay. And you're not going to, this lulav is going to get a hard time recycling. Although, didn't we just see in yesterday's daf how they passed the lulav down from generation to generation? So that means in certain cities where they really did not have a lulav, so this lulav would be part of the estate. Could just imagine the lawyer telling the kids.
Split it.
Yeah. Phil, that was excellent. I really enjoyed that. Okay. Apparently, we don't want me postling this. Okay, but basically here. Okay. So look. So now, here we go. So I just split the middle leaf. Okay. Yeah. Don't try this at home.
So it's like ripping a pit all off of an
actual. I understand that. We're 2 weeks away from Purim. It's fine. I know. Okay, good. So so that's Nechluku Atiyamas. Rashi says, and from Rashi, what does it sound like from Rashi? Rashi says Nechluku Atiyamas. Sounds like from Rashi goes all the way down to where the spine is. Okay? That's what it sounds like from Rashi. Now, by the way, keep in mind that everything we're discussing right now, we are simply scratching the surface. Meaning that as much as we're doing the Gemara and Rashi, and we're somewhat informed, but please remember, we're somewhat informed. Meaning, yeah, there's the Rush, there's the Rambam, there's obviously a lot to go through, and we're just Rashi Pruk, and we're just getting the basic information down. Okay, so the Nechluku Atiyamas Ma'u Tashma Da Amar Rabbi Yochanan Amar Rabbi Yeshua Amar Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi Nitla Atiyamas Pasal. Okay, so a statement was made in the name of Rabbi Yeshua Ben Levi, and that is that the Atiyamas is removed. It's no good. Okay, so my love who did Nechluka. So the Gemara says, okay, well, if the Atiyamas is removed, it's no good. So who did it must be the same thing if it's split as well. Interesting. Basically, what the Gemara is suggesting now is that if you have a split leaf, it's ki'ilu, it's not there. Right? In other words, in lumdus. Basically, what the Gemara is suggesting is that a split leaf is ki'ilu, that the leaf is just, it's gone. And much like the tiyamis, once it's removed, the lulav is no good. Well, if it's split, hu adin, the lulav is no good. So the Gemara says, lo, nidla shani da'achasolei. So the Gemara, that was a havamina, and the Gemara rejects, and the Gemara says, no. If there's a difference between actually physically not being there versus a split, if it's not there, it's not there, it's chaser, it's missing. But if it's split, one can make the argument, which the Gemara is doing right now, that a split is considered as if it's there, it's just there and split. Igadarman, that's version number one of the discussion. Version number two, Amar of Yochanan, Amar of Yeshua ben Levi, Nechluka Atiyamas, Nasa Kemisha Nidla, Atiyamas Upasal. And according to version number two, no, the Havamina stays. The Havamina that. A leaf that's split, it's ke'ilu, it's as if it's not there, it's tantamount to chaser, and therefore the lulav would be disqualified. Okay, adkan. So, very often, again, you go to the market, and what do you see? You see people staring at that middle leaf. You see people, all right, gives the sellers a heart attack. So, be careful. In fact, don't. But you'll see them moving up the spine to get to the middle leaf, and they'll see if there was a split in the middle leaf. Now, based on the way that I just... I was a little too aggressive with this, but based on this, in other words, this would be no good. It's split all the way down, and based on the Gemara's conclusion, when it's split all the way down, it's kilo, it's not there. Okay, obviously what you're looking for is where it is connected all the way to the very top. It's not always easy to find. Okay, and discovering it to be connected all the way to the top can lead to possibly harming and injuring the lulav. So okay, that's maybe you want someone else to help you along. But anyway, that's just the beginning. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, back to the Gemara. We're in the middle of the Amud. We're on Lamed Beis Amud Aleph, right in the middle. Rabbi Yehuda says, Tanya, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Mishum Rabbi Tarfon, Kapos Tamarim. Now Kapos Tamarim literally means the palms, the leaves of the palm tree. So, but kapos, kafus, also same word for tied up. Right, very often we'll find the Gemara, right, illustrations of people that are tied up, kafus, meaning kafus means to be tied up. Imaya par yichaftenu, which means that according to Rav Yehuda, if the leaves start spreading out, bind it together. I'm sorry, and here now for the next 10 lines of Gemara, even less, the Gemara now is going to entertain other possibilities, meaning the Torah says kapos tamarim, and this is what it is, meaning it's a frond, it's the unripened, undeveloped frond of a palm tree. Basically what the Gemara wants to now entertain is maybe it's other parts of the palm tree. How do I know it's the leaf? How do I know it's the frond? Maybe it's other parts. And the Gemara is going to now argue. The Rambam writes that these are arguments of the Gemara, but really, truth of the matter is that when all said and done, we know. Meaning, we have a general idea because of what the Rambam refers to as Perushim HaMukubalim. Meaning, it's just simply, those are the accepted Pshatim. of the Torah. But here the Gemara is just kind of help along, so to say, give a couple of reasons, rationale, svaras in terms of how we know it's referring to the palm from, but Rambam writes, ultimately when all is said and done, the arguments are good, but it's perushim amukabal, meaning we just simply know. Same thing is true with pre-Eitz Hadar, the Torah doesn't even say the word Esrog. How do we know it's talking about Esrog? So again, perushim amukabalim, we know. But the Gemara is going to give a couple of arguments. So the Gemara says, "Hi, kapos tamar lulava who aim a charusa." I'm sorry, charusa. So the Gemara says, "Maybe it's charusa," meaning maybe it is the developed, rigid leaves of the palm tree, and not the underdeveloped palm frond like I have right over here. So the Gemara says, "Being a kapos for like no." The Gemara says, "No, I need kapos," meaning I need to be bound up. And once it's developed, so obviously the fronds are going in the opposite directions, and we don't want that. The ema ufta. So the Gemara says, okay, but maybe we should be going after the ufta. So Rashi says it's the trunk of the tree. Rashi ishtila. Does that speak to you, Phil? Okay, so I think it's a trunk. So meikar hadekel, but then Rashi goes on to write. So I get it from the rest of Rashi. Meikar hadekel shu chalak ve'in anaf yotzei mimenu lakan lakan she'elecha kafus emenu. Okay, so I don't. It's hard to visualize the thick palm trees to take the trunk. I mean, you have to be pretty strong. But anyway, okay. In other words, we're looking basically at some part of the base of the tree. So kapos mechal de'ika parud. So the Gemara says no, but the word kapos means that it has to be bound up, meaning it has the potential of spreading, and we want it before it spreads out. The trunk is never going to spread out. So v'hai kapos v'alame la'olam. Okay, so the Gemara says ve'ema kofra. So the Gemara says, okay, how about this? Maybe a shoot of the palm tree. Now, one of the shoots of the palm tree, which ultimately will start spreading away from the palm tree. So maybe that's what we want. We want some sort of shoot of the palm tree. So Abai rejects it based on the fact that the Torah is pleasant. The Torah is not unpleasant. Rashi explains the elu asuyin kikotzim v'yotzim em uksin harbei umisartin asayyadayin. The shoots that come off the palm tree are very serrated, have a lot of thorns, have a lot of thistles, your hands are going to get cut up. And I cannot imagine, this is a Abai's argument, I cannot imagine that the Torah wants us to use something which is going to cut up our hands. The Torah is not interested in having us to have unpleasant experiences when performing mitzvahs. Amalei Rava Tusrola Ravina Ve'ema Tarte. I'm sorry, Ema Tarte Kape de Tamare. So the Gemara says, okay, maybe what the Torah wants is actual dates themselves. Okay? Meaning, not a palm frond, but a date. Hold the dates up. Shake the dates. So the Gemara says, kapos ksiv. So the Gemara says, no, because when the Torah writes it without a vav, it's chaser. It's not plural, it's singular. So ve'ei machada. So the Gemara says, okay, so one date. So it's, hold up one date in your hand. So the Gemara says, lahu kaf karile. So the Gemara says, no, that doesn't get the labeling, the assignment of kapos. That would be kaf. The Torah would have said, ulkachtam lechem b'yom arishon. Kaf tamarim, something like that. So but kapos is referring to the actual leaves. So the Gemara says, okay, ad kan. That's how we know it's a leaf. And again, just to reiterate, it's not exactly how we know. It's perushim amukabalim. We know because we know. And then the Gemara is just giving us better hints and allegations from the pasuk themselves. Okay, tzinei har barzok sheira. Okay, you go to the mountains of the Iron Mountains. And you get a lulav from the Iron Mountains, so it's going to be kosher. So I guess you can ask me, where are the Iron Mountains? Okay. You know I'm geographically... I think that's Bear Mountain. So the Yetzinei Harbar Zokshera, Va'as Amar Abai, Lo Shanu Ela, Sherosh Shoshoseh Magila Tzadikaru Sholzeh. So the Gemara says, apparently the Tzinei HaBarzel lulav has the following. Now you'll see our lulav, I go one leaf and I go and I take out another leaf, and obviously it's tremendous overlap. Meaning the base of this leaf is all the way here, the base of this leaf is here, and for the most part it's mostly overlap. And the lulav, it's hard to visualize, but the lulav of Tzinei HaBarzel, this leaf only makes it to the base of this leaf. And this leaf is only going to make it to the base of this leaf. That's the Tzinei Har Barzel. Okay, so to us it will look strange. And meanwhile, the Mishnah says, and the Brisa now is just simply going to reiterate, it's kosher. It's fine. So I'm Rabbi Lo Shana Lo Shorosh Shalzeh Magila Tzadi Karo Shalzeh. I know I just read this, but let me just reread. Aval Aim Rosh Shalzeh Magila Tzadi Karo Shalzeh Apostle. So the so Abai says, but with only one stipulation. It's got to be that, I know those leaves of the Tzina Harbarzel are short, but the tip of the leaf has to make it to the base of the next leaf above it. Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara quotes the Bryce as well, Tzina Harbarzel Psula. Vahanan Tanan Kshera, Elishmamina Kabaya Ishmamina. So the Gemara says we have another Bryce that says that it's Pasul. So okay, good. So Abai is right. In other words, some Tzina Harbarzel who love him are good, some are no good. And what it depends on is, like Abai just suggested or explained, that the tip of the leaf makes it to the base of the next one above it. V'ika derami le mirma. Now some are going to basically arrive at the same conclusion, but just by pinning the Mishnah against the Braisa. Tanam, we learned in the Mishnah, Sinai Harbarza Kashba, Tanya Psula, Amar Abai, Lo Kasha, Kansha Rosh Hashazeh, Magil Atzad Ikaro Shalzeh, Kansha and Rosh Hashazeh, Magil Atzad Ikaro Shalzeh. So it's the same form, it's the same conclusion, just a simple different format, which is, quote the Mishnah, quote the Braisa, they're at odds with one another, Abai resolves the two. Okay. Amar Rabbi Merion, Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Va'amri Latini, Rabba Bar Mary, Mishum Rav Yochanan Zakkai. Shnei Tamaros Yesh Begay Ben Hinnom. There are two date trees in the valley of Ben Hinnom. Okay, you go to Yerushalayim. This was pointed out to me. I can't replicate. I can't show you again where it is in Yerushalayim, but it's right outside the old city. And one of the valleys is called Gay Ben Hinnom. Right. So the. So there are two tamaros over there. Va'ola Asham Ibeinayim. And if you look carefully, you're going to see smoke coming up between the two. V'zeu Shishanin and Sinei Harbarzok Sheros. And that is where, now the Gemara gives us some geographic location, that's where the Sinei Harbarzel are located. V'zui Pitzcho Shel Gehenim. And oh, by the way, says the Gemara, that also happens to be the entrance to Gehenim. Which makes sense. It's called the Gay Ben Hinnom, the Valley of Ben Hinnom. If this sounds strange to you, that the Gemara just identified where the entrance to Gehenim is, so let's remind each other that this is not the first time since we started Shas again that we were introduced to the entrance of Gehenim. The Gemara in Erevin, Chaf area, right here, Yutes. Okay, so the Gemara in Erevin also identified, the Gemara in Erevin, if I'm not mistaken, identified a couple of entrances in terms of entrances to Gehenim. You're going to ask me a question and you know what's going to happen, but go ahead.
Is there any relationship with
the gates of the Arba? Oh, in other words, is it connected to any of the gates over there? I don't know. I don't know. But, okay. But certainly interesting that's, and I'll tell you what is strange.
It's not on the birthright trip.
They don't take you there. I'll tell you what is strange. The Gemara, right, it is confusing in the following. We are talking about Sinei Harbarzel, and meanwhile, where is it located? In the valley of Hinnom, right? In other words, please make up your mind. Are we talking about the mountain? Are we talking about the valley? Okay, and I understand with every valley there's a mountain right next to, right alongside. Okay, but anyway, that certainly is a little bit strange, but we move on. Lulav sheish bo shosha tfachim. Okay, the lulav has to be minimum three tfachim. Now, this never really becomes an issue because our lulavim are usually cut to a length much greater than three tfachim. So again, a tefach, how big is a tefach? It's a linear measurement. So it's the size of a fist. I know whose fist we're talking about. And so it's not we're not clear. We don't have perfect clarity in terms of how long a tefach is. I put it somewhere in the range of 3 to 4 inches. There's two basic shitas that are found amongst the poskim. Chazon Ish has it closer to 4 inches. And he talks in centimeters. He was an Eretz Yisrael. So the Chazon Ish puts it closer to 4 inches. And the who's the other famous shita? It would be more famous if I remembered it. So the Chaim Naya. So he puts that at something close to 3 inches. Okay, I don't know how my kids got a hold of it, but they brought home a tape measure. It's great. And on one side of the tape measure, it had tefachim and amos according to the Chazon Ish, and on the other side of the tape measure, it had tefachim and amos based on the shear of Rav Chaim Naya. Okay. Anyway, but we're talking. Let's just go with my fist over here, so that we have a ballpark understanding. So the Mishnah says that lulav has to be minimum three tefachim. So that's one. That's two. That's three. I mean, you're basically about here, you know. And that's three tefachim. And as we're going to add one more tefach, so even if I add one more, so we're basically about here. Okay. So it's obviously most of our lulavim are well beyond the 3 or 4 tefach mark. It will be a question which the Gemara is going to ask and entertain, and that when we're talking about the measurement, are we talking about the measurements of just the shedra, of just the spine, Or do we get to include in the measurement also the leaves as well? That will be subject to a debate, which we're going to see right now. Lulav sheish bo gimel tfachim. Amar Rav Yehuda mashmo shir hadas varava shalosha v'lulav arba'a. Kidei shei lulav yotze min hadas tefach. So first of all, a statement made by an Amara, which is that the hadasim and the aravas have to be 3 tfachim high, and the lulav has to be 4 tfachim high. So that the lulav will go above the others more than a tefach. So why is that? Why should that be? Why does the lulav need to be taller than the other, and then the other minim that's alongside? So I'm going to show you Rashi. Rashi writes, Rashi Shedro, no, she lulav yotzei lamala min hadas. Yeah, right, third line down in Rashi, kishem shu gavoa bimino mikulan. So Rashi says because what it does is it reminds us how they grow naturally. In other words, the hadas and the arava do not grow as tall as the lulav naturally. And so basically when we're holding them in our hand, they basically represent how they're naturally grown. And so since this sounds like from Rashi, and since the lulav is normally taller, so therefore in our hands we want it to be normally taller than the others as well. Rabbi Parnacham, Rabbi Yochanan, Shezer Shol Lulav Tzarech Sheyetzem in Ahadas Tefach. And according to Rabbi Parnach, who quotes the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the spine of the lulav has to exceed the hadas and arava by tefach. In other words, it's not just that the lulav itself has to be 4 tefachim, but the spine of the lulav has to be 4 tefachim. Obviously, it results in a taller lulav. Tanan. Okay, so basically we have two opinions over here, but both of them have the number at 4. Now that, of course, is difficult. Our Mishnah put the number at 3, and the Gemara is going to make that comment right now. Tanan, lulav sheish bo gimel tefachim kedei lananeh bo kasher. Our Mishnah says that the lulav only has to be 3 tefachim. Eima u kedei lananeh bo kasher. Mark it islay. So the Gemara says, okay, we'll make one simple correction in the Mishnah or emendation in the Mishnah. Well, it's going to add the word vav before the words naneh bo. It's u kedei naneh bo. So that means that it has to be 3 plus. And the 3 plus, in other words, there's a mitzvah of nanuin. We'll talk more about that later in the Masechta. You have to shake the lulav. So the shake is created by that extra tefach. And so therefore it has to be 3 plus the shake. And the shake is going to be an additional tefach. Now again, how is that measured? So the Gemara says, okay, mark it islay or mark it islay. We'll go back to the two opinions that we just mentioned of whether it's the 4 tefachim include the leaves or it's just the shedra excluding the leaves. Tashma shir hadas v'arava shloshav v'lulav arba'a my lav b'hadde alin. So the Gemara assumes that it's talking about with the leaves lo labar me'alin. So the Gemara says no, it means that the shedra, the trunk, has to be 4 tefachim. Gufa shir hadas v'arava shloshav v'lulav arba'a. Okay, the Gemara now is going to quote a braisa. So tosefta. And now we're going to talk about the length of the lulav. Okay, it sounds like so far the conclusion is pretty straightforward. Hadas and Arava have to be minimally 3 tefachim, and the lulav has to be minimally 4 tefachim. It is open for debate in the Gemara whether that number of 4 tefachim is the spine or it includes the leaves as well. But our numbers are 3 and 4. Okay, Gufa. The Gemara now is going to quote a Tosefta. Shir hadas v'arava shlosha v'lulav arba'a. Okay, hadas and Arava is 3, and the lulav is 4. So far, so good. Rabbi Tarfon Omer. So Rabbi Tarfon says, an Amma of 5 tefachim. Now, it's unclear at this point in time what exactly he is saying, but what it sounds like he's saying is that I need 5 tefachim. Okay. And I know that's not exactly what he's saying, and we're gonna spend a couple of minutes this morning trying to figure out what he's saying. But right now, let's assuming that's what he's saying. Amar Rava Sharle Marla Rabbi Tarfon. So Rava makes a great statement. God, please forgive Rabbi Tarfon. Right? Hashta Ava Shlosha Lo Meshkechina B'Chamisha Mibaye, meaning that's too much. The Hadassim have to be braided. Tomorrow's daf is dedicated to the Hadass. Okay, so in tomorrow we're going to see that the hadas needs to be braided. Great way to remember that tomorrow's daf is about the hadas is that tomorrow's daf is Lamed Gimel. It's 33. Okay, 3-3. Okay, so the braiding has to be where, just to say it simply right now, even though I have a dasam right here. Okay, we'll save them for tomorrow. Tomorrow's Shabbos. I got a muktzeh issue tomorrow. Okay. I won't show them to you tomorrow. Okay. So in other words, but the hadas has to be braided, where that on each line of the hadas, each horizontal line of the hadas, there needs to be 3 leaves. Okay, how exactly they're situated, that's tomorrow's daf. But in the meantime, however, though it sounds like from Rabbi Tarfon, I need to find a hadas where five consecutive tfachim of hadas need to have braided leaves. Rava's reaction to that is, that's crazy. It's very difficult to find. Shara le marei le Rabbi Tarfon. God, please forgive Rabbi Tarfon for his opinion. It's hard to imagine. So, Avos Shloshal Mishkachina b'Chamisha Mibaye. Like, we can't even find three. And now he wants us to get five? Okay. So, Kiyasa Rav Dimi Amar. So, Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he says, let's revisit the Tosefta. Meaning, the Tosefta is not exactly as we just explained it. That it's three versus five. That's not the Tosefta, but rather as follows. So Kiyasa Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he says, this is the Pshat. Here's what you do. What we're going to do is we're going to take a regular amma of six tfachim, that's your standard amma, right, which is somewhere in the ballpark of 1.5 to 2 feet. And what we're going to do, let's not do the conversion. Let's just leave it as an amma, a regular amma. And we're going to take that amma and we're going to break it up into five parts. So that, well, they're not really a tefach. In fact, what are they? They're one tefach and one fifth. Okay, a tefach and a fifth. And now today, ma'am, shlosha lahadas v'ashar lelulav. So now we're going to take these units. This is what Rabbi Tarfon means. We're going to take these units of one and a fifth. We're going to stack three of these units one on top of another. That's what Rabbi Tarfon wants. So shar le'mara, God forgive him. It's not as bad as we initially thought. It's not five tfachim. It's 3 3/5 tfachim.
How did he come up with that?
Well, because Rabbi Tarfon, if you look carefully at the language of Rabbi Tarfon, he says, Ama bas chamisha. What does that mean? So Rav Dimi says, I'll tell you what it means. It means, take an Ama, a standard Ama, divide into five parts, and I want three of them. Three, because that's the unit, meaning the unit is three. And then what the Tanakam is saying is three regular tvachim. And what Rabbi Tarfon is saying is, no, three converted tvachim. So kama havalu talsa v'talsa chumshe. So the Gemara says, okay, it comes out to 3 3/5. So the Gemara says, kashi d'shmol d'shmol hacham rav yunam shmol shir hadas v'rav shlosha. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is Shmuel then becomes inconsistent because Shmuel says the number is three. V'hasam amar rav yunam shmol lachik rabbi tarfon. And meanwhile, the Gemara also says in the name of Shmuel that the lach is like rabbi tarfon. Okay. Now it's funny. Once we had the original understanding of Rabbi Tarfon, which was that he wanted five tfachim, I mean, the Gemara could have jumped on this. And the Gemara could have said, no, it can't be, because Shmuel says that the magic number is three, not five. Okay, but anyway, but even in our new understanding of Rabbi Tarfon, that's 3 3/5, that's not three. So the Gemara says, lo dak. Okay, the Gemara says, you know what, but Shmuel was just ballparking it. So the Gemara says, amen, amen, lo dak, lechomer lekula mi'amrinan. The Gemara says, no, that's not right. Meaning, if the real number you need is 3 3/5, and Shmuel was ballparking it, but he was just approximating, but he's approximating down, no, you don't do that. Meaning, if it's 3 3/5, and you said four, I can understand. But if the real number is 3 3/5, and you're just saying it needs to be three, that's... people are going to walk away, perhaps with a non-kosher lulav, a set of lulav.
As an Amora, Shmuel cannot really argue with Rabbi Tarfon. He's just trying to explain.
No, but he's ruling. He's ruling like Rabbi Tarfon. He could do that.
I mean, initially it was like.
Okay, so well, let's just finish the thread. So me, Amrina lo dak. So Kiyasa Ravin. So Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael. Now you know this happens because it always happens. Rav Dimi comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he gives his understanding, and then Ravin comes in from Eretz Yisrael and he gives his understanding, and his will be more palatable just in terms of the Shmuel issue. Kiyasa Ravin Amar Amar Bas Chamisha Tefachim Asiyah San Shisha. So the Gemara says that no, his understanding is you take an Amar of five Tefachim. Now that's not a standard Amar. The standard amma is six tvachim, but you take an amma of five tvachim, and you divide it into six parts. Okay? So now it's same ma'am shlosha lahadas v'hashar lelulav. Okay, now we all, Rabbi Tarfon is adjusting the tefach, but now he's not adjusting it to 1 1/5, he's now adjusting it to 5 6. Fine. So the v'hashar lelulav, kama havaluhu, trei upaga. So now you take three of those, so you arrive at 2.5. So kasha to Shmuel, the Gemara says, okay, now it comes out a little bit strange, because Shmuel passes like Rabbi Tarfon, and Rabbi Tarfon said that I need the adjusted tefach, but the adjusted tefach now results in 2.5 tefachim. And meanwhile, Shmuel says, how tall does your hadassim have to be? 3 tefachim. So the Gemara says, this is better. Low duck. Yeah, but when he said 3, he was just ballparking. V'hayna l'chumra, low duck. And the Gemara says, and he was rounding up, which is good. D'amar Ravuna, Amar Shmuel, halacha k'Rabbi Tarfon. The halacha is like Rabbi Tarfon. Okay, it's interesting. I'll just share with you. It's interesting that when the Rambam records, how high does your lulav need to be? How high does your hadassim need to be? So the Rambam writes, 3 tefachim, 4 tefachim. 3 for the hadas, 4 for the lulav. And in the entire discussion that we just went through in the Gemara, where Shmuel rules like Rabbi Tarfon, and we just adjusted the shear of Rabbi Tarfon, so that the real number that you need is not 3, but rather 2.5. So the Rambam doesn't make a mention of that. It certainly is interesting. And the Rama writes, and generally speaking, we should try to get a hadas that's 3 tefachim high, and the lulav to 4 tefachim high. Lulav usually, almost never will become an issue. Okay. Hadas hagazel v'hayavish pasul. Let's go a little bit further today. If I have a stolen or a dry hadas, it's going to be pasul. I mentioned from the beginning of the perek, here's what we're going to do. We are going to go through each one of the minim in a separate mishnah. Alright, the Gemara later on will point out that each of the minim have its own unique set of halachas. Alright, by the lulav, we mentioned by the lulav the idea of nifritsu alav and nifridu alav, and that's specific to the lulav, and each one of the minim is going to have its own unique halacha. So we have a min regarding the had. We have a mishnah dedicated to the hadas. So next is hadas. Hadas hagazav ayavish pasul, shal asher v'shal anidachas pasul, nikta mersha nifritsu alav. Okay, so far so good. Same. Osha you anaviv merubos me'alav. If you have more leaves, more fruit, then you have leaves. There are berries that grow on the hadas. Okay, historically, I've yet to see the berries. Now, it's not fair because when the hadas get to us pre-checked and pre-examined, so and so, pre-packaged, and you know, nothing to see over here. It's okay. There's still people who enjoy examining the hadas head to toe. But anyway, the Mishnah says that there are berries that grow on the hadas, and if there are more berries than there are leaves, it would be pasul. So the im mi'atan kasher. Okay, but here there's a simple way to fix the situation, and that is remove the berries. Take off the berries, so now I have more leaves than I have berries, and that would be kosher. And then the Mishnah says, "Ve'ein mematan b'yantif," but you cannot do this on yantif. Okay, and the Gemara's discussion tomorrow will be, and what if you do? Okay, that's, you know, classic Gemara discussion. We'll wait for tomorrow. Tana Rabbanan, let's just do a couple more lines just to finish up today's daf. Tana Rabbanan, anaf eitz avosha, anaf av chofin es eitzo. I need the leaves to cover the branch. That's a reference to the hadas, myrtle. Myrtle's an excellent example. I mean, here, I guess today we could see some remnants of a hadas, but the leaves do an excellent job covering the branch. Ve'ema zesa. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? The olive branch is an excellent example as well. So be'ina avos v'leika. Yeah, but I need the braiding. In other words, what the myrtle does is that it provides the great scenario where not only do the leaves cover the branch, but they also create like a braiding braiding effect. Because the three leaves are basically overlapping one over the other. Ve'ema duva, what about a chestnut? Apparently the leaves of the chestnut do have a braiding effect. I haven't searched, but I'll just right now I'll trust the Gemara. Be'inan anaf of chofin is eitz of aleka. There you do have a braiding effect, but the branches are not covering the leaves are not covering the branch. Ve'ema hirduf. Now I don't forgive me. I don't know what the hirduf is, but I do know the following. It's unhealthy to eat. It has some sort of poison in it. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi, darcheh darchinon, v'leika Rav Amar mehacha ha'emes v'hashalom ahavu." So basically, the Amoraim say, "No, if it's poisonous and someone could die, once again, the Torah would not give us a mitzvah that would create an unpleasant scenario, and certainly not a lethal scenario. That's not the way of the Torah. So it cannot be the hirduf." And again, just to reiterate, the Rambam says again, we already knew the conclusion going into the discussion, but the Gemara is just giving us ramazim, ways for us to help us pinpoint how we know it based on just simply the simple description that's given in the Torah. Okay.
Very hard to find
again. I don't even know what it is, but fine. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up.